Now, from the left coast to the D.C. Beltway, covering the topics you love to hate and hate to miss, it's the Silk or Joe Show.
Welcome to the Silk or Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe with you. Glad to be here this Thanksgiving weekend. And, well, if you are all stuffed out on turkey, thank you for tuning in nonetheless, though I admit it that perhaps listenership might not be as high as I'd like it to be this weekend, but it's okay, I understand. I myself would probably have a turkey sandwich in one hand as I'm doing this, and I've got the mouse in the other hand as I'm scrolling through all my headlines and written remarks that I wanted to get through today. Anyway, though, the Silk or Joe Show is brought to you by the Main Street Radio Network, so we want to thank them for distributing... it's the Salem Radio Network that we thank for distributing the show. The Main Street Radio Network, we thank for allowing this show to exist. Because, well, without them, there would be no show. And they have actually supported us in the wake of some clients revolting against the show because they found it revolting. And we appreciate that. We appreciate the Main Street Radio Network's commitment to the First Amendment. And we also want to, well, I already did thank the Salem Radio Network. That was just 2.5, almost 3 years of verbal reflex right there that I was about to repeat it. So, Main Street Radio Network can be found at mainstreetradionetwork.com. You can also... Yeah, that's right. And the Silk or Joe Show can be found up there as well. Boy, I threw a wrench into myself a moment ago, and now I'm second-guessing everything that I'm saying. But yes, mainstreetradionetwork.com is the site for both Main Street Radio Network and the Silk or Joe Show. And on top of all of that, Facebook is the social media page for both Main Street Radio Network and the Silk or Joe Show. It's all under Main Street Radio Network. And we also, likewise, on Wimkin, W-I-M-K-I-N, share the same page as well. Main Street Radio Network is also the page where you'll find updates on the Silk or Joe Show. However, the Silk or Joe Show does have its own page at GetterGETTR.com/Silk or Joe Show, which is more specific to this program or whenever I guest host for the Alan Nathan Show. However, if you want the podcast for the show, well, you just got to go to Main Street Radio Network. So let's say you're managed to tune into this somehow Thanksgiving Day weekend, and you're thinking, hey, I kind of like this show. Maybe I ought to hear what he said last weekend or the weekend before. Well, that's on mainstreetradionetwork.com. And if you want to listen to the Alan Nathan Show, well, its podcasts are up there as well. If you want to catch up with them, and it's all right up there on the website for you, but also alannathan.com is another website for the Alan Nathan Show. All right, but right now I have some headlines to get to. Now all the social media pitches are out of the way. Oh, did I mention Twitter, though, at Main Street Radio and also at Alan Nathan? Gotta remember the Twitters, even though we might be trying to pull back from Twitter eventually. At the moment, we're still on there, still got a solid presence. We've been there for how long now? I don't know how long. They've been there since before I started it with the show, and that was like 10 years ago. Quite a long Twitter presence. Oh, actually, speaking of 10 years ago, we're pretty much at the 10th anniversary of the Silk or Joe Show. Of course, 10 years ago it was known as Jane, but still, it's existed in one form or another for 10 years now, and going into our 11th year, that's what we're going to start saying now, that the show's going into our 11th year, because that's the verbal sleight of hand to make it sound like the show's older than it actually is. See, unlike people with shows, you actually want them to sound older. All right, now we get into the headlines, now all that's out of the way. There's a couple of issues that I've been discussing this week on the Alan Nathan Show, and there's a couple of headlines here that I just want to ram into because they all seem to come together. A headline from Breitbart: Joe Biden craters NBC poll thanks to Jew-hating young Democrats. That is the headline from Breitbart. And meanwhile, we have another poll. Palestinians express strong support for the October 7th massacre and Hamas while opposing Israel's existence. Again, both of those are Breitbart headlines. So you have this horrific event that happened on October 7th. It is the largest mass murder of Jews since the Holocaust. And young Democrats, young voters in America are in favor of it. In fact, a bunch of them are out there on social media talking about how much they love this letter that Osama bin Laden wrote to justify his 9/11 attacks, which include in its justification the existence of Israel. That was enough for him to want to kill almost 3,000 Americans and injure 6,000 more, and young Democrats, young liberals, agree that almost 10,000 people should have been hurt or killed. So that is the state of the young Democrat voters. It's no wonder that Joe Biden is losing them on this NBC poll. But, it's a good loss. It's a moral loss on that grounds. But here's what I find interesting, though. Another headline from Breitbart. Hollywood boycotts Elon Musk. Disney other major studios pull ads from X, which was Twitter, following anti-Semitism controversy. And I'm not exactly sure what Elon Musk did that was anti-Semitic. Apparently he allegedly liked anti-Semitic posts that were allegedly anti-Semitic. But to be honest, people are hypersensitive about that kind of thing. However, the problem with that is they're going after Musk, but they're not going after Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib, Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, or any of the Democratic Socialist Congresswomen and Congressmen who have expressed support for Hamas. They're just going after Elon Musk for alleged anti-Semitism, while you have people actually supporting genocide out there who none of these companies are saying a word about. It's rather interesting there that they're trying to, I guess, play both sides of the street. Is that it? As far as the left goes, they're walking the same kind of tightrope that Joe Biden is walking, where on the one hand, he doesn't want to lose the support of the Jew-hating young Democrats, but on the other hand, doesn't also want to alienate the older voters and the Jewish vote. Maybe that's what's going on with these Hollywood boycotts, too, of Elon Musk, because on the one hand, they know that there's the rabid anti-Semites that love their products. Well, actually, that's a gamble. They might just be trying to pander to that crowd like they were doing with Black Lives Matter, which is among the rabid anti-Semites, by the way. You've seen various Black Lives Matter groups or chapters across the country that have been tweeting their support of Hamas's massacre, and one of them even used as its logo the Hamas paratroopers who massacred a concert. So that's where Black Lives Matter stands, and that Hollywood still stands with them. They're going after Elon Musk for anti-Semitism, because why not? Because he's the other side. And I guess maybe that's also part of it. Not only is it part of this tightrope that they're trying to walk that I mentioned a moment ago, trying to keep both the support of the young anti-Semitic peoples and the older pro-Jewish people, but also they're trying to switch the narrative. They do not like at all how all of this stuff with Hamas has revealed the rabid Jew-hating side of their own party. So they're trying to sort of change the narrative. They're trying to point out all the anti-Semites on the other side they can, in hopes that that will distract us from their own rabid anti-Semitism. And we've seen that a little maybe with the Bin Laden letter too. Because it was a left-wing news outlet that had it published. This was this letter came out in 2002, and this UK outlet called The Guardian, they had it published. And it had kind of fallen into obscurity until another UK outlet called The Daily Mail had linked to that old article, and then that's when it took off on social media. So then The Guardian took it down. And, you know, maybe they say they took it down because they wanted to stop the spread of hatred, but maybe they took it down because it was exposing the hatred that already existed. You don't read a screed by Bin Laden with an open mind, okay? That's not something that you generally would do. That's not something you generally would expect of somebody. Even the most ardent right-winger neo-Nazi type probably wouldn't read that letter with open mind because, well, it's been pounded into our heads that 9/11 was bad. The only people who might read it with an open mind are the ones who think 9/11 didn't even happen, which, then again, that could be all the young leftists out there these days. Who knows? However, this letter, though, it served to expose how the Democrats were, or the young Democrats, I should say, the ones who are pulling away from Joe Biden right now, were predisposed to listen to Osama bin Laden and believe what he said. And where did we get to that state from? Why are all these young leftists so anti-Semitic, so hateful of Israel, and so pro-Palestinian? Well, let's just go to the schools. There was actually a headline a while ago. There was a school in Oakland, California, where the teachers were instructed to teach about the occupation of Palestine. That's not an accurate term. That's not what has happened. That hasn't been the case for almost 20 years now. There hadn't been an occupation of Palestine. The Israeli army and military withdrew from Palestine in 2005. And the only reason there was an occupation there to begin with is because the Palestinian people kept trying to kill Jews. And then suddenly, when the Israeli military withdrew, the Palestinian people voted in Hamas, and in Hamas's founding charter said, "We exist to kill Jews and wipe out Israel." It's all right there in the fine print. Not even in the fine print. It's all up there in big print, big enough font. It's a font bigger than those what you see on those cell phones for the old people, you know? It's right there, very obvious. Anyone who cares to read it can read it. But we're talking about young Democrats here. Reading isn't exactly one of those things that they do. I think reading is one of the four-letter words that they don't know, along with B-A-T-H and W-O-R-K. However, it is very vital that they should have done some history lessons here, because now we're at this stage where they believe in this victimhood ideology where the most oppressed wins and anything they do is justified. And so Bin Laden claims he's oppressed. He's not a white person. He's a Muslim. They've been taught that that automatically makes you oppressed and that automatically makes you the truth teller in the situation. They don't take into account that he was a crazy mass murderer. Rather, they just take into account his skin color and his religion. And that's it. That's all they need to know to decide who's right and who's wrong. And that's what we're seeing playing out with their support of Palestine. So, of course, Democrats, they're going to be desperate, trying to patch up the holes here and perhaps trying to deflect to the other side of the aisle. More Silker Joshua after this break.
This report is sponsored by IBM. Customer service is now the top priority for CEOs when it comes to applying generative AI, leapfrogging other functions like research, innovation, marketing, and risk compliance. According to the IBM Institute for Business Value, 85% of CEOs expect generative AI to be interacting directly with customers by 2025. Piloting generative AI in customer service now can help accelerate a successful enterprise-wide rollout. Jennifer Quinlan, Global Managing Partner, Customer Transformation, IBM Consulting.
Everyone knows that today's modern consumer expects nothing less than a fast and uniquely personalized experience. Generative AI holds the potential to change the game in customer relationships by truly enabling businesses to deliver tailored recommendations, relevant answers, and extraordinary customer service.
How can businesses get started? Implementing generative AI tools to manage standard customer interactions can free up human agents to engage in more meaningful interactions, enhancing the overall customer experience. To learn more, visit ibm.com/IBV. What tech type am I? To help learners understand how their personalities and strengths translate into tech job roles, IBM has developed a quiz supporting ambitious learners to discover and explore STEM professions they may have thought were out of reach. This free, comprehensive, and practical online quiz uses AI to analyze learners' responses and identify specific job roles to consider, all in 5 minutes or less. Quiz results tell learners what tech professional type they are, and then curates a list of free IBM Skills Build courses and credentials to help get learners there. Lydia Logan, IBM VP, Global Education and Workforce Development.
The Tech Type Quiz is an engaging AI-powered assessment that can help learners envision themselves in a career in STEM. Through IBM Skills Build, we want to reach communities who are underrepresented in technology fields. We provide them with a customized learning path, free coursework, and the opportunity to earn digital credentials to help them on their journeys.
You can find the quiz at techtypequiz.com, sponsored by IBM.
Take a look under your bed. Find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that overall you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't sat in your lap in months. And even more stuff, but still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. Wait, no longer needed? That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed, and they're the stuff inside your stuff. Even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs, and it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs. And isn't that worth parting with the leftover guitar from your 80s cover band? Goodwill. Donate stuff, create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
Adopt US Kids presents multiple choice parenting.
Your daughter just had her first breakup. Do you A, put yourself in her shoes?
How could he do this to you? And for Sheila, she has split ends.
B, console her.
Oh, sweetie, this is going to happen a lot. 4, maybe 5 more times before you get married.
C, take charge.
Got to get this all straightened out. Give a little talking to man, mano a mano.
Hey, Steve. It's now a good time?
No? Okay, no problem. Bye.
Or D, help her find a new boyfriend.
I know a great place to meet boys. The internet. Nice, single boys. Never mind. How about some ice cream?
As a parent, there are no perfect answers. But you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUS Kids, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Silk or Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe with you here today. So part and parcel with what I was talking about in the last segment with Joe Biden losing the support of these young Democrats who are pro-Hamas, we have apparently a rash of young Western women and millennials converting to Islam in protest of the Israel-Hamas conflict. But I don't think they're exactly aware of what they're doing because, again, it's their whole world framework that they think that they're being supportive within when really they have no understanding of what the heck they're doing. And joining us now to talk about this, we have Dr. Carol Lieberman. She is also known as the Terrorist Therapist and hosts both the Terrorist Therapist Show and Dr. Carol's Couch on VoiceAmerica.com. She is also a board-certified Beverly Hills psychiatrist and is a three-time Emmy-honored TV news talk commentator. Dr. Lieberman, always happy to talk with you. How are you today?
Fine, thank you.
So what do you make of this phenomenon, not just the Western liberals, the young ones especially, coming out in support of Hamas to the point of abandoning their own political parties, but also now converting to Islam?
Yes, it is really getting more outrageous by the day and more dangerous for America. You know, it started, you could say, with the protests right after October 7th, and then what next happened was on TikTok, some women putting up the letter to America, the letter that Osama bin Laden wrote after 9/11 to give excuses, to rationalize why indeed he was right in attacking America. Now, they picked out, these women on TikTok picked out the parts that were the most anti-Semitic, but this was just, they took it out of context. There was a lot more to the letter to America. And in any case, it was from Osama bin Laden, who, you know, is not really the person you should emulate. So then now it's gone even further, where these Gen Z, and, well, first of all, they've become groupies of Osama bin Laden. And then they took it even further to rebel by converting to Islam. You know, it's, to me, it seems like the what came before it, which was kids converting to trans and putting it on social media and getting likes and getting attention and, you know, getting more enthusiasm for their journey. But they don't know what they're doing because, first of all, they don't know Sharia law, you know, what the Sharia law says about women. I don't think that they would be so eager to convert. Actually, it's called a reversion rather than a conversion, because in Muslim law and Islam, they believe that some believe that really everyone was born Muslim, and so it is just reverting back to what they were born as, what religion they were born as.
Yeah, that's actually sort of borne out in Osama bin Laden's letter justifying the 9/11 attacks, because in that letter he talks about how modern Jews are not actually Jews because the Muslims are the real Jews, and Judaism and Christianity are the false religions today because they stopped being real religions the moment Islam was founded.
Yes. You know, this, I mean, so really this is so dangerous because, I mean, it's dangerous. When kids become trans and they don't know what impact this is going to have for them later on, you know, when they grow a little older and they realize, oh, my God, what did I do to my body? You know, with the hormones and the surgery and all of that. And then they're sorry. And then it's, you know, a little hard to go backwards. But, of course, this is even, well, I don't know that I should say more dangerous. Changing themselves to become trans because that's what their teacher tells them to do is obviously dangerous and bad for them. But converting to Islam or reverting or whatever you want to call it is bad for America because this is they have so no clue of what this is all about because terrorists have their ideas for over 1,000 years has been to have global jihad. Yes, they want to destroy Israel, and yes, they want to destroy Jews, but really their plan, their ultimate plan, is global jihad, global countries being under Sharia law. And so, you know, it's like fun and games to these millennials and Gen Z, you know, oh, we're gonna be groupies of Osama bin Laden and we're going to change to Islam and all that. But they don't get it, you know, how serious this all is. And just recently, the son of the founder of Hamas has come out and said that. And I've been saying this for years. You know, after 9/11, I became the terrorist therapist. And I have been trying to not only help people with the memories of 9/11 and coping with the threat of terrorism and so on, but also to realize that this is their plan to make global jihad, and that we have to be much more careful than America is being right now, letting terrorists on the terrorist watch list come across the borders and not really paying attention to how many terrorists there are in America already. And, of course, now, you know, we're having homegrown terrorists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the Homeland Security Secretary Mayorkas the other day, he came out, his priorities at the border aren't identifying terrorists, but making sure you ask everyone their pronouns when they come across the border.
Yes. I mean, the world has gone mad. This is like Alice in Wonderland Tea Party. You know, we've all fallen down the hole in Alice in Wonderland, and except that it's not a storybook. This is really happening, and we are all in real danger.
Mm-hmm. And I think the problem with these young people who are going to be running the country someday is twofold, because on the one hand, if you explain to them everything that's wrong with their adoption of Islam for these reasons and everything that's wrong with their worldview, they're just not going to believe you. They're going to call you some racist, propagandist, stuff like that. But then on the other hand, you know, it seems to me that they have actually been predisposed to believe this sort of worldview, to have this sort of worldview, and believe everything that bin Laden would say, just because it already confirms what they themselves have been taught to believe in our school systems and through our media.
Right. Right. Exactly. Yes, it fits. It fits into their hatred of America. I mean, you know, who hates America, or who in our history so far has hated America more and done more to destroy America? Osama bin Laden. So adopting him as their hero and his religion and all of that is just going along with their, you know, yes, what they've been taught. And to tell them the opposite, I mean, they've already, there are people who believe that Israel started the war, that, you know, it wasn't that Hamas invaded Israel, Israel invaded Hamas or something. It was Israel's fault in any case. And even though there are videos, I mean, for example, about the hospital, the first hospital that was attacked, you know, there's proof that it wasn't Israel, that it was someone in Gaza, one of the terrorists in Gaza, by accident or on purpose or whatever, probably on purpose to make it seem like Israel did it. But in any case, there is proof of this. There is videos, there's audio, and yet people don't want to believe it, so they just refuse to believe it. It is, and Osama bin Laden's letter didn't just talk about Jews in Israel. It talked about a lot of extraneous things. It talked about AIDS. It talked about Bill Clinton, you know, and his sexual exploits. I mean, there were lots of different things, but of course, they picked out the things that had to do with anti-Semitism.
Mm. Yeah, it's well, we've only got 40 seconds left, but it's interesting that that is the part that they would hone in on, the specific anti-Semitism. Maybe, is it because it's relevant, or is it because that's just how they feel? 20 seconds left.
Well,
your final word.
Okay, sure. Well, they pick anti-Semitism because they identify with the Palestinians, because they feel as though they're you know, a minority, or they're you know, picked upon or discriminated against. And so they identify with the Palestinians, who they feel are in the same boat.
All right, Dr. Carol Lieberman, appreciate you being on the Silk Road Joe Show. Listeners, more coming up after this break.
The federal ban on menthol cigarettes could have unintended consequences for Hispanic communities. Here's United States Hispanic Business Council President Javier Palomares.
You know, history has taught us that prohibitions just don't work. A federal ban on menthol cigarettes would hurt minority-owned small businesses. It would make communities of color more vulnerable to criminalization and bolster cartel pocketbooks. It's just simply bad policy, and it must be withdrawn.
Sponsored by the United States Hispanic Business Council.
Cyber criminals are getting more sophisticated in how they target everything from your personal information to our national security. The U.S. Army Reserve's elite cyber soldiers are on the front lines in the battle against international hacker networks and a host of threats from cyber crooks. Chief Warrant Officer 3, Jack Scott.
The best protection against cyber attacks is to stay vigilant. For beginners, avoid opening unsolicited emails or texts from unfamiliar people or groups, and refrain from clicking on any unknown links. Additionally, steer clear of using free public Wi-Fi for online shopping, checking bank accounts, or accessing sensitive information. Consider using a VPN to help keep your online activities protected. Check your privacy settings to make sure you have control of who can access your posts.
The U.S. Army Reserve has more than 120 career paths, including cyber specialized soldiers. For more, visit usar.army.mil.
This report is sponsored by IBM. Customer service is now the top priority for CEOs when it comes to applying generative AI, leapfrogging other functions like research, innovation, marketing, and risk compliance. According to the IBM Institute for Business Value, 85% of CEOs expect generative AI to be interacting directly with customers by 2025. Piloting generative AI in customer service now can help accelerate a successful enterprise-wide rollout. Jennifer Quinlan, Global Managing Partner, Customer Transformation, IBM Consulting.
Everyone knows that today's modern consumer expects nothing less than a fast and uniquely personalized experience. Generative AI holds the potential to change the game in customer relationships by truly enabling businesses to deliver tailored recommendations, relevant answers, and extraordinary customer service.
How can businesses get started? Implementing generative AI tools to manage standard customer interactions can free up human agents to engage in more meaningful interactions, enhancing the overall customer experience. To learn more, visit ibm.com/IBV.
The March of Dimes and HCA Healthcare are committed to the best possible start for every baby. I'm Amy Casseri, Vice President of HCA Women and Children's Services, where we have the honor of delivering over 200,000 babies a year. We partner with the March of Dimes on research and fundraising to help build a brighter future for babies everywhere. So march with us on one of the many HCA teams assembled nationwide. Learn more at marchforbabies.org/HCA.
I was in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean when it happened. There was a sudden jolt and our submarine crashed on the seafloor. We were in total darkness.
That's Dr. Dejana Figueroa, a marine biologist and STEM teacher, talking about a deep sea dive she'll never forget.
It's funny. When I was a kid, I was afraid of the ocean. And there I was, 2 miles below the surface. But as a scientist, you prepare for that. Using our training and a little creativity, we fixed the sub and finished our experiments. The dive was just too important. Every dive gives us glimpses at things few people ever get to see. Glowing creatures, fiery undersea volcanoes. When we got back to the surface, I kissed the ground and called my mom, of course. But you know what? I wouldn't trade that dive for anything.
Dr. Figueroa uses her passion for STEM to discover new things and make the world a better place. She can STEM, so can you. Check out She Can STEM for more stories and inspiration. A message from the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Silkworm Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe with you here right now, desperately trying to do some really quick math as we come into the segment here. So, all right, 1.2 million. And now I got to do another number because I am trying. It just occurred to me right before the show started, maybe I should get some actual numbers here about how many Palestinians are supporting Hamas. Because, well, supporting Hamas's attacks in Gaza. Because I've talked before about how there's the you have all this throng of refugees that they want to throw out to the West into the United States. So I figure maybe I should have a number on, because there was a poll actually done by Breitbart earlier this week. The 19th of November poll, Palestinians express strong support for October 7 massacre, Hamas while opposing Israel's existence. I mentioned that in the poll in the opening of the show, but I didn't actually go into the broad numbers here. All right, there we go. So, Democrats want to take in 1 million Palestinian refugees. That's what they said. Now, here's the problem. There's only 1.3 million Palestinians who opposed the attack by Hamas. Do you really think those are the refugees we're going to be getting? On top of that, they've called upon other Arab countries and their European Union to take in their share of Palestinian refugees, another 1 million. So 1.3 million Palestinians who oppose Hamas, how many of those are going to be in that 2 million, right? Even if all 2 million of the, even if we get that whole, even if, let me rephrase that. Even if every 1.3 million of the ones who are opposed to Hamas come into, are leaving Palestine, there's still 700,000 who like Hamas that would be coming out during all this, who were in favor of this attack. Do we know where those 700,000 would be going by any chance? Of course not. We don't even know who's coming to the country already from Hamas. I talked about it on the Alan Nathan Show earlier this week, how when a reporter with The Publica actually tried to figure out what the heck was going on with a Hamas training camp right across our border that had existed for a little while and then folded up and left, she found out during that course of that investigation that there were other Hamas training camps in Mexico. The FBI didn't give a darn about them. The FBI started talking to her. They started trying to get her to come into them. So, and then the article on thepublica.com that was talking about this, that's blocked. You can't read it unless you use a special web browser that's designed to circumvent country lockouts on viewing web pages. So that's the state of the government's position on Hamas. They don't really care if that they're coming in. They care that you know that they're coming in. That's great law enforcement by them, I guess. So I can only imagine that they're not going to be particularly choosy to make sure that out of the 2 million people leaving the Palestinian territories, they're not going to be particularly particular about the 700,000 that are in favor of Hamas and where those people end up. And let me just further say that I'm assuming the only territories they're talking about evacuating is Gaza, and they're saying 2 million out of there. That's how many Palestinians there are in Gaza, 2 million! It's divided to about 2 million in Gaza and 3 million in the West Bank. So if we take in refugees from the Gaza conflict, the Democrats want to take in 1 million, that's half the people in there already! And then the other half they want to send across the world? Sure, why not? That includes by the way, with the majority of Palestinians supporting, actually, in Gaza itself, 64% roughly supported the Hamas attacks. So even if we do get an even split, there is no way, if we take in 1 million, that all 1 million of them are going to be there is a chance that we're going to miss the 14% of Palestinians who are opposed to Hamas coming into this country if we take in that 1 million, because, you know, it's divided by 50-50, right? So, and with 60, actually, no, shoot, I got it backwards. So I got all these numbers and I was looking at them right in the break and I was trying to do the calculator instead of preparing the segment, and this is what happens when I get an idea during the break. I had a car crash on the air. So, with 63%, 64%, it was some decimal in there, of Palestinians in Gaza supporting Hamas, that means that if we take 1 million out of the 2 million, if we take 50% of them, that there's no way that all 1 million of them are going to be opposed to Hamas, because there aren't 1 million Gazans that are opposed to Hamas. That's the problem. There aren't 1 million that are opposed to Hamas. There's only, 37% of 2 million is that are opposed to Hamas. That's a very slim figure. It's about 740,000. Just did some quick math in my brain. So with only 740,000 or so Gazans opposed to Hamas, how are you going to get 1 million opposed to Hamas when there's only 740,000? That's the question. Even if somehow we got that entire 740,000 Gazans to come to this country, that still leaves us with 260,000, if we can reach that 1 million figure that Democrats are floating about, 260,000 Hamas supporters coming over who liked the massacre and who didn't give a damn about the consequences of it, that ended up with Gaza being leveled almost. You're going to have 260,000 suicidal fanatics that hate Jews that much coming into our country. And, well, again, with the entire population of Gaza being 2 million, how many of these people are going to be actual militants who perpetrated these horrific acts coming in? We're not even vetting the terrorists coming over the southern border. This whole fantasy world there. But yeah, that is totally not the original monologue that I had planned for this segment, but it just occurred to me I should probably look into that poll, because there were some other numbers that I was actually looking at earlier this week. This past Monday was apparently some sort of day of remembrance for members of the trans community. And, well, if we take in those 260,000 Hamas lovers, plus however many of the 740,000 are going to end up being pro-Hamas, because remember, with those figures, it's entirely possible that the entire million that comes into this country are in favor of suicidal massacres of Israelis. So, with that number, I'm pretty sure a lot of them aren't going to be too fond of the trans community, because, as we were talking in the last segment, these people are pretty radical about their beliefs and, dare I say the term, conservative. However, nonetheless, the trans community, which seems to be very sensitive, again, they had this day of remembrance for members of the community that were killed or committed suicide. Now, apparently 82% of individuals contemplate suicide, while around 40% attempt it, trans individuals. But only 33 people were killed in the past 12 months. Now, the Human Rights Campaign, they're the ones coughing up these stats, and they said that 33 is an epidemic of violence. By the way, guess who they blame for the violence? Yours truly, and conservatives in general, but not the Muslims. They aren't blamed for it, and certainly not the million Hamas lovers that we'll be getting coming into this country if Democrats have their way. They're not going to be blamed for it either. But you know what, though? At 33, again, it's all of those deaths. Everything from, well, sorry, not all of those deaths, it's all deaths, period. I misread my own writing here. Everything from police shooting a nutcase trying to kill them to hit-and-run accidents. If a trans person died at the hand of a non-trans, that counts as a murder and part of this epidemic of violence against the community. And even with such a broad category, you know, just randomly shooting someone who's intruding in your home that happens to be trans, or if you're driving and you pass out while you're driving and you hit somebody and it's not even deliberate, you didn't even know anyone was there, that still counts as a murder. And even with all that very loose definition of what counts as an epidemic of violence against trans people, they still only got 33. It's incredible the numbers that they had to stretch, and still they got such a small number, which they consider an epidemic of violence. Now, this is a clear case of trying to fit the square peg of reality into the round hole of your idiocy. They started with this narrative that trans people are persecuted. They needed to find some big numbers. Well, they found none. No hate crimes or very few that ended in murder. So instead, they expanded it. Any murder whatsoever constitutes persecution. Even with that, the best they got was 33. Now, there's been varying figures about how many Americans are trans or intersexed. 1.3 million, 2 million, 2.6 million, 5.6 million. No one seems to agree. And these are all numbers from the past 2 years. So no one has any idea, really. Depends on who you ask. And two of those numbers that I mentioned came from NBC in the same article. But let's lowball it. 1.3 million. Does anyone want to guess what the percentage of 33 out of 1.3 million is? Hint. Smaller than what 2,574 out of 48.2 million is. And that's the number of blacks killed each other by other blacks. Now, percentage-wise, if you're black, you're more than twice as likely to be killed by another black than a trans person is of being killed at all. 7.5 out of 144,000 versus 3 3/10 out of 133,000. Sorry, that's the closest I can make the numbers without drawing some more wacky things than half a person, but you get the idea. Blacks are more than twice as likely to be killed by each other than a trans person is of being killed at all, yet there is no day of remembrance for black-on-black violence, now is there? And using the stats provided by what NBC says was the largest gay right group in the country, no less. However, if you go with 2 million, you will find that the homicide rate of trans people is equivalent to that of whites. Meaning that the percentage of the trans population that's murdered equals the percentage of the white population that's murdered. If you go with 2.6 or 5.6 million as the figure of how many trans people there are in the country, that means a greater percentage of the white population is killed than the trans population. So how come whites don't get a day of remembrance if that's the case? It's all about just doctoring the statistics so that you can make that 33 people seem like a significant number. And going into it, the Human Rights Council admitted that they did this. They admitted that they counted everything as a deliberate act of hate against a trans person, even if it wasn't. They just said outright, we counted all of them. And they even gave examples of the kind of stuff they counted. That hit and run thing that I mentioned, that was actually one of theirs. So, all these phony statistics just to make you think that there's something going on when there isn't, and now you have the trans community lashing out in violence because they claim there's a genocide when there isn't.
Get a jump start on your holiday shopping with Meta. For the loved ones on your list, consider the Meta Quest 3 next generation headset that brings mixed reality into the mainstream in vibrant full color resolution. Quest 3 allows virtual elements to blend with your physical surroundings. Experience front row seats at a basketball game, turn the dining room table into a virtual piano, or work out on a mountaintop. With more than 500 experiences, including games, virtual hangouts, and a home theater in your headset, there's something for everyone to discover. MetaQuest accounts are available for people age 13 and over, and new this year, parent-managed Meta accounts for preteens, which have age-appropriate protections. Starting at $499.99, MetaQuest 3 is a great value. Capture life's best moments with the high-tech camera in Ray-Ban Meta smart glasses that can live stream to Instagram and Facebook, plus stay connected with hands-free calls and messages, and listen to your favorite music with built-in speakers. For must-have tech gifts this holiday season, go to meta.com. Sponsored by Meta.
Kia America honors veterans by connecting highly trained former military technicians with meaningful new careers at Kia retailers through the Kia Veterans Technician Apprenticeship Program, VTAP. Launched earlier this year in partnership with Educational Resource Systems Incorporated, the program is a U.S. Department of Labor and GI Bill approved national apprenticeship. Kia VTAP provides master-level trained veteran technicians with career access to hundreds of participating Kia retailers nationwide. Eligible veterans may also elect to receive a substantial monthly GI Bill stipend during their 12-month apprenticeship. Greg Silvestri, Vice President, Service Operations.
Kia VTAP is delivering skilled and experienced military veterans to our retailers during this period of unprecedented record sales and growth. I'm inspired by the quality and tenacity of these veterans as we honor them and all military veterans who served in the U.S. Armed Forces.
For more information, visit KiaVets.com, sponsored by Kia America.
Hi, I'm Catherine Judah Chilo. I have three wonderful children with my husband, Sean, who I met on the 17th season of The Bachelor. At just 5 months old, our son, Isaiah, became sick and spent 4 days in the hospital. At first, my husband and I thought he had a common cold, but it turned out to be much more serious. It was respiratory syncytial virus, or RSV. RSV is the number one reason why babies are hospitalized. I'm sharing my story so other parents can learn about the importance of helping protect their babies from RSV when they are most vulnerable to it. If you are pregnant or plan on becoming pregnant, speak to your OBGYN or healthcare provider about the risks of RSV. As a mother, I've seen a lot of warning labels, from choking hazards to baby toys, and I wish RSV came with one. To learn more, visit www.bewareofrsv.com. That's www.bewareofrsv.com. This message is brought to you by Pfizer.
What is dedication?
I am the father of a 9-year-old little girl and a 6-year-old little boy. And I find fatherhood both relentlessly challenging and relentlessly rewarding. My daughter is biological and my son is adopted. I love them both so much. From the morning when you wake up to putting them to bed at night, and every moment in between, it really is so special, and boy, is it exhausting. One thing that I fear about being a parent is the future for my children. I think a parent's job is to protect our children, but also prepare them for the world so they become good, kind human beings. But I'm also hopeful that the future holds a more inclusive and compassionate world for them.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs, and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. but get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils, like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Welcome back to the Silk or Joe Show, everybody. Thank you for sticking with us through this hour of the program. We are now joined by former Congressman Robert Pittenger. He was a Republican out of North Carolina's 9th District. He served as chairman of the Congressional Task Force on Terrorism and Unconventional Warfare and as vice chairman of the House Financial Services Subcommittee on Terrorism and Illicit Finance. But despite the events of the day, he's not here to talk about any of that. He's actually on about a new book he has, Character Matters, Personal Stories of 31 World Changers. Congressman Pittenger, happy to have you on the program. How are you today?
Good morning. I'm doing well. Hope you are.
I am. Thank you, sir. So tell us a little bit about this book.
Well, Character Matters, Personal Stories of 31 World Changers, really evolved because of my interest to leave a memoir for my grandchildren. And we've had 50 years of relationships with a number of individuals who've had very impactful lives. But what I wanted to convey was what are the character traits of these individuals that enable them to be successful and have meaningful, important roles that they played in our culture, in our society, and frankly, throughout the world. So that's the nature of the book, and there's a lot of great stories. They're all personal about these individuals and my relationships with them, with Ronald Reagan and Margaret Thatcher and Mikhail Gorbachev and Tom Landry and just any number of people. That they might really glean from them. These are ordinary people who really had an impact on the whole world. But they were ordinary people because of their character, because of who they were as people. And that's really what I think is important in our society today.
So how did you land on these 31 in particular? There must have been a list the slight length of my arm of people that you might have wanted to include. How did you narrow it down to these 31?
Well, we came up with the individuals that you know that I knew and I knew well and I'd worked with and I'd spent time with. You know, I'd hosted Margaret Thatcher in Charlotte two times. I was with her in London. And you know, you learn from them, and you ask questions. Billy Graham, Colin Powell, Kathy Lee Gifford, Franklin Graham, Joe Gibbs, all these individuals are people I've had friendships with for 30, 40, and 50 years. And so it's the depth of the relationship of the people that I wanted to write about. It just wasn't people that I was unfamiliar with, but people that I had genuine relationships with.
So what changed it from just leaving something for your kids to just, you know, I'm thinking instead I'm just going to make this a full-on book. Let's share it with the world.
Well, as I shared the concepts with individuals and some of the stories, people said, man, that's good stuff. Like, for example, when I first met Margaret Thatcher, I picked her up in a friend's Rolls Royce, okay? And when she got in the car, she said, you know, Robert, I've never been in a Rolls Royce. I'm a common. And we don't ride in these. I said, well, we'll both enjoy the ride. I hadn't either. But I said, Lady Thatcher, we all know that you are the Iron Lady. You were there when the wall came down. You fought the unions. You prevailed. You put the Great Britain on an economic track that they could continue. They were, you know, on a really downfall of, economically because of the enormous amount of debt that they had. And obligations. I said, but you are one of the most successful people of the century. But what we don't know is what made you Margaret Thatcher. What gave you the courage, the stamina, the fortitude, the commitment, the resiliency to prevail, to continue on when you had such strong headwinds against you, even within your own party, and how the media clamored against you when you forced the cuts in pensions and. And she said, well, Robert, it was my father. She said, my father, number one, he was a Methodist Sunday school teacher, and he took me to church, and he wanted me to know about Christianity. But she said, my father taught me three concepts that really sustained me throughout my life. And the first one was, and these were all leadership. The first one was, in leadership, first determine the right thing to do. what's the principal thing to do in any given situation? The second one is, with your whole heart, commit yourself to that objective. And thirdly, with all your persuasion, with all your abilities, seek to bring your friends and your colleagues to join you. And that's so succinct and so clear. But that's really why she was so steadfast and willing to commit herself. But let's move the clock forward 20 years. That was 1993 when I had her in Charlotte. In 2013, I was elected to the United States Congress. And they took us to Harvard, spent 4 or 5 days with us, wanted to give us their briefing, all 85 members of the newly elected Congress, Democrat and Republican. And with us were 4 members of the UK, United Kingdom Parliament, 2 members from Labour, and 2 members from the Conservative Party. And they sat with us, but Joe Kennedy took us out to Fenway Park for to see the park, not a game, this is in January, but we got to see the dugouts and the locker rooms and go around and had just great experience. On the way out, I rode on the bus with a member of UK Parliament who was a member from the Labour Party, the opposite party of Lady Thatcher. Lady Thatcher, of course, was a conservative. And I, as we chatted along and talked about some mutual friends in Parliament, I said, "Madam, I would like to know what you really think about Margaret Thatcher." And I was expecting the darts to fly, because knowing that they were on opposite points of view, she looked at me, she said, "God bless her. She saved our country. She had the courage and the conviction to do what my party did not have the commitment and that they were unwilling to do." Well, boy, that sank in. I realized exactly what Margaret Thatcher said to me was reality. And that was the way that I was determined to be serving in the United States Congress. Determine the right thing to do, you know, stick with it, and seek to get all your friends to join. And so those types of stories we tell throughout the book. And I think those, you know, whatever point of view you are politically, it doesn't make any difference. These are character traits. I deal with George W. Bush, George Herbert Walker Bush, President Trump, President Obama, Tom Landry, Ben Crenshaw, if you're a golfer, known him since I was 8 years old. So all these folks have great, important characters that enable them to be really impactful. So if people want to learn more, they can go to Amazon, Character Matters. Just type that in with personal stories, and you'll see the book.
All right, former Congressman Pittenger, thank you for being on the show to talk about your book. And again, listeners, Character Matters, Personal Stories of 31 World Changers. You can go check that out because we're done with you today. But however, our website, if you want to check that, is mainstreetradionetwork.com. Be seeing you.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities, so please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.